These are boom times for America's commercial fishermen.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. The U.S. seafood catch hit a 17-year high last year. All regions of the country are showing increases. That's according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association, or NOAA, which has just come out with its annual report. Marketplace's Queena Kim joins us now with the details. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what exactly does this report say?
Well, it says that last year in 2011, commercial fishermen caught 10.1 billion pounds of fish and shellfish, and that was valued at $5.3 billion, which is a record. So they measure this in a couple ways. In terms of weight, that's a 23% increase, but in terms of dollars, it's a 17% increase. So it's been a good year for fishermen.
Well, that seems to go against the conventional wisdom, though, right? That fish stocks are depleting, that fishermen are having a really hard time these days.
Yeah, and it's important to keep in mind that we're only talking about certain fish. And we're also only talking about the United States. So internationally, I think it's a more mixed picture. So I'm going to give it over to Sam Rock. He's the head of the division at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And they regulate the fisheries here in the U.S.
Overall, we have been working very hard for the last decade, and the fishermen have been making a great number of sacrifices to rebuild the fish stocks across the country. And we're getting to see some of those successes. We've actually rebuilt 21 fish stocks since 2000.
So there are a couple fish that are driving the numbers. That's the Alaska pollock, which is used in fish sticks, and then the Pacific whiting, which is used in fake crab meat. But there's still a lot of fish that are in trouble, and that's the oyster and blue crab fisheries in Mississippi are still having a hard time, and the Chinook salmon in Alaska.
Marketplace's Queena Kim, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Well, when I think of foods that are safe to eat, rice is certainly up there. But Consumer Reports has just recommended that we limit our rice consumption. That's after tests found arsenic in over 60 rice products. Marketplace's Sarah Gardner has the details.
Now we should worry about rice? Really? Well, before you start tossing out your Rice Krispies and Rice-A-Roni, here's what we know. Consumer Reports and the FDA have both found arsenic in common rice products. The FDA says the levels merit a deeper look. Consumer Reports calls them troubling. Here's Consumer Reports' Urvashi Rangan.
What we know is that it's a known carcinogen and that the amounts we're seeing are certainly within the range of the limits we set for water, which even those limits carry quite a high level of risk.
But FDA Commissioner Margaret Hamburg says there's no evidence yet that rice is unsafe to eat. She says her agency won't make any conclusions until after completing its own study. Meanwhile, what's a rice lover to do?
The best advice really is balance and moderation.
Or substitutions, like baby oatmeal cereal instead of rice. And where's that arsenic come from in the first place? Well, it's naturally in soil and water, but arsenic-laced manure is also a source. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are down in global trading this morning, 0.6% lower in London right now, 1.2% lower in Hong Kong after some disappointing figures on manufacturing activity in China. The numbers do point to a slowdown at factories in China, but analysts say the slowdown may be stabilizing. Here in this country, the Wall Street Journal reports that Bank of America will cut 16,000 jobs by the end of the year. That's about 6% of the bank's workforce. The job cuts could put rivals JPMorgan Chase and Wells Fargo on top when it comes to workforce size in the banking industry. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow inched up 13 points to close at 13,577.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
This week, Russian state media announced the existence of a 62-mile-wide diamond deposit in eastern Siberia. Russian scientists say the diamonds are at the bottom of a 35-million-year-old meteor crater. But the big players in the diamond business aren't all that impressed, as David Nogueras reports.
On the sixth floor of this building in downtown Portland, Oregon, behind two bulletproof doors, and inside this man-sized safe, Yossi Malka keeps most of the inventory for the Tel Aviv Diamond Company in a white plastic bucket. Malka is holding a diamond, which he moves ever so slightly, making it sparkle in the light.
This stone, wholesale value is over $45,000.
But Malka says he doesn't expect the news out of Siberia to deflate the price of this stone or any other in his safe.
Because it's nothing new. The Russians have been mining diamonds for a long time.
In fact, this new deposit isn't new at all. The Russians have known about it since the 1970s, and although it was considered a state secret, it wasn't a very well-kept one, says Des Killily. He's a London-based analyst with the Royal Bank of Canada.
The fact that it hadn't been made particularly public is because it wasn't that important.
Killily says he's talked to nearly a dozen people who've been to the site, including geologists, formerly with the South African diamond company De Beers. All of them told him the same thing. The crater's filled with the type of diamonds that are used to cut and machine materials, not the kind you make earrings out of. While those gemstones cost a few $1,000 a carat, an industrial diamond of the same size will cost you just a few bucks. Still, in boom times, the demand for industrial diamonds can be enormous. But Killily says right now the global economy isn't booming, and that might be one reason why all those diamonds are still buried in a hole in Siberia. I'm David Nogueras for Marketplace.
And finally, to a PhD student named Jonathan Hood at Auburn University in Alabama, who managed to pay almost a semester's worth of tuition using mail-in rebates. According to Business Insider, the scheme goes like this. He goes online and finds products that offer cashback rebates, buys them, sends in the rebate, sells the item back on eBay, waits about 4 months, gets the rebate check, and boom, $3,500 to cover almost a semester's worth of tuition. The only question, I guess, is how's that PhD coming? In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.